program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes. If you are a moron, please turn off your radio, because we don't need any more stupid, narrow-minded, pencil-neck geeks who wouldn't know the First Amendment if it came up and bit them on the butt. Thank you.
Take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Led you to the tinker's shop. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. Can't take the sky from me.
Well, good evening, my friends. Yes, this is the Tinker, and you have arrived at the Tinker's shop. Tonight is the 7th of February of 2015, and as always, here we are, 9 o'clock in the evening. So, welcome to the Tinker Shop, as I said, here on the Survival Circle. And this is a program I had originally intended on doing last week. And so, you know, obviously the date currently showing on my homepage there is, off off kilter, but I'll be going ahead and correcting that probably today. So, yes. Well, since I imagine everyone who is listening here is starting out initially in the chat room for the survival circuit, if you want to go ahead and just listen, that's fine. But if you want to follow along with the, shall we say, visual aids that I have, go ahead over on the left side of the chat room. You'll see a link there for the Tinker's Shop. Go ahead and click on that, and that'll bring you to the Tinker's Shop homepage. For those who are not in the chat room, who are just listening on the podcast, or over the net, I'll put it that way. What you want to do is go out to www.arlinn, and then a dash or a hyphen, tower.com, and then /, and this is with a capital T for Tinkers, T-I-N-K-E-R-S, _, shop. Okay, and if you go out to there, again, that'll bring you to the same page as the link in the chat room would take you to. On the right-hand side, if you go to that, you will see, you know, like a grid here. And at the very top of the grid, you'll see an item there that says the Gladius. Go ahead and click on that, and it will bring you out to what is the, shall we say, the first page of a series of pages that I'm going to be doing over the next few weeks. Tonight we're going to be talking about the Gladius. And in the big box here, this is a quote from a friend of mine. He had asked me if I would go ahead and build him a Gladius. He said, "The M16 of the Roman Empire, the sword that is the most deadly weapon ever made, maybe for a millennium, the choice in its design. The brass pommel, the grip, the blade itself. The weight is amazing, it's real. Grasping it is a history lesson in itself." Yes, that's one person's reaction to when he first received the Gladius that I produced for him, shipped it off to him, and you could almost hear him yell all the way from Virginia to Wisconsin. So, a little bit about the Gladius. It's derived from the sword originally used by the Celtic tribes of ancient Iberia, or modern-day Spain, and it was adopted by the Roman legions. The Gladius, with its long, narrow point and wasp-waisted blade, was the scourge of the battlefield, and often it was the last thing seen or felt by Rome's enemies. And even today, it's ever popular. The Gladius is still in demand over 2,000 years after its first adoption, and is currently one of the most frequently requested swords to be made. It has been called the M16 of the Roman Empire. Okay, if we go ahead down here in the page just a little bit, I have three shots here of recreations of the historical Gladius types. One of the oldest ones of the Gladius itself is known as the Mainz Gladius. It's, you know, it's named after Mainz, Germany, where they had found several of these in quite degraded condition. Obviously, they'd been, you know, buried in the soil or in the bottom of rivers for, you know, almost 2,000 years. Now, the Mainz Gladius is one that still has somewhat of the Celtic pattern blade, where you could almost say that it's leaf-shaped. Now, obviously, it's pointed. It widens out in a gentle curve, and then starts narrowing back down, and then widens back out before it gets to the hilt. Okay, the next one down is the Fulham Gladius. And again, this is still the same basic principle. The Fulham has somewhat of a longer point and less bulge to the blade, but it still widens out and then narrows down to a little bit narrower a waist, and then widens before it gets to the hilt. The third one here in the series is the Pompeii Gladius. This is the one that became the, shall we say, the standard sidearm for the Roman legionaries. It was also used in the gladiatorial games in Rome and in the Colosseums and in the other Colosseums throughout the Roman Empire. The best examples of this were found in Pompeii, and so that's where it's derived the name from, the Pompeii Gladius. The point on this is not as extreme or as long, but it's still very much of a very sharp, almost chisel-type point. And the blade on the gladius itself, or the Pompeii gladius, is straight. Immediately after the point, that's as wide as it gets, and goes all the way back to the guard or the hilt as a straight, straight shape. Cross-sectionally, on all three types, it's basically a very, shall we say, a skinny diamond. The blade lengths generally are anywhere from 19 to 23 inches long, and generally they are listed as being about 2.5 inches wide, and the thickness at the thinnest portion of the diamond is between 3/16 of an inch and 1/4 of an inch. So it's, it sounds like it's a pretty skinny blade, but overall, it is one that, shall we say, is deadly. Okay, so, now, the gladius. It is composed of 5 major portions. The blade, which I've discussed here somewhat already. The tang, that is the portion of the blade that's hidden inside the guard, the grip, and the pommel, which are the other 3 portions. The guard on a gladius was almost what you could say is a D shape. If you look at it on the flat side, it almost, had the outline like of a D, it's not a true semicircle, because they had a little bit of a flat on both top and bottom. The grip on a gladius was characterized by having either 4 or 5 grooves in it for the bearer's hand to be able to grip into. That allowed the grip to be somewhat larger for strength, but at the same time, with the grooves in there, it allowed the average person's hand to fit onto the grip tightly, so it wouldn't slip out of their hand. Then the pommel, that is another piece that basically capped off the stack to produce the whole hand grip area. Okay, so why don't we do this here? before I go ahead and get into a little bit more of a description of actually how the Gladius is produced and built, I'm going to go ahead here and just put a little bit of music in here just to, well, basically to wet my whistle, and so I can talk without my voice going dry. So please enjoy, and this is one that's a piece of music for the modern warriors, the Warrior's Song.
With a need to bleed you when the light goes green. Best believe I'm in the zone to be. From a yin to my yang disease. Put a grin on my skin when you come to me. Cause I'll win, I'm a one of a kind. And I'll bring death to the place you're about to be. Another river of blood running under my feet. Forged in the fire lit long ago. Stand next to me, you'll never stand alone. I'm last to leave, but the first to go. Lord, make me death before you make me whole. I'll feed on the fear of the devil inside of the enemy. Faces in my sight. Aim with a hand, shoot with a mind. Kill with a heart like Arctic ice. The blood spilled on the floor, and if another one stands, I'll kill some more. Bullet in the breach and a fire in me, like a cigarette thrown to gasoline. If death don't bring you fear, I swear you'll fear these marching feet. Come to the nightmare, come to me. Deep down in the dark where the devil will be. In the mall where the jaws and the razor teeth. Where the brimstone burns and the angel weeps. Call to the gods of across your path, and my silhouette hangs like a body bag. There's a moment now long past. The shadow of death is the one I cast. I am a soldier and I'm marching on. I am a warrior and this is my song. My eyes are steel and my gaze is long. I am a warrior and this is my song.
We're not just going to shoot the bastard. We're going to cut out their living guts and use them to grease the treads of our tanks. We're going to murder those lousy bastards by the bushel.
Now I've been bleeding, I mean to inflict the grief, and the least of me is still out of your reach. The killer machine's gonna do the deed until the river runs dry and the last breath leaves. Stand in the air with a head held high, I'll stand in the path of the enemy line. Feel no fear. My prize for God and country, I'll end your life. I am a soldier and I'm marching on. I am a warrior and this is my song. My eyes are steel and my gaze is long. I am a warrior and this is my song.
All right, now you send the bitches. You know how I feel.
Okay, well, we're back here now. So, yes, it's one of those days where I've been about in four different directions in trying to do anything. So, okay, well, like I said, we kind of covered, you know, what the original history was of the Gladius there before, and, you know, roughly, you know, what the parts are of a Gladius. So if we go ahead and go down here to the next section here, it's where I have it kind of labeled Custom Gladius Recreation. And back in fall of 2010. A friend of mine who's from out on the East Coast, he gave me a call one time and says, hey, just curious, do you think you could build me an early period Roman short sword? And I said, oh, you mean a gladius? He goes, yes. I says, well, would you like a Mainz or a Pompeii style? And he says, oh, the Pompeii, of course. So, that's what we decided upon. I says, okay, I can do that. And said, I'll take a stab at it. And so we did spend, you know, a couple weeks, you know, going back and forth talking about things. And my getting materials together to do it. And in his particular case, I went ahead and picked up a chunk of 4140 steel. And I'll go ahead and talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes here. The original swords, rather the gladius style, were just basically iron swords or, you know, early steel swords, where they would, you know, basically, you know, forge them out. And that could be done, you know, from regular, you know, mild steel, which can be, after the completion of the sword, it could be gone ahead and hardened. In our situation today, and again, like I had said with the shows, I'm not being a doomer and gloomer. This is just information that, who knows, you know. If things would go totally kaflooey worldwide and we got knocked back, you know, several hundred years, you know, knowledge of this sort might be useful. For example, one could actually make blades out of a lot of other materials. Like this friend of mine had suggested, well, you could always build it out of a lawnmower blade. Well, that is a possibility. You know, that's a good hard steel that will take a good edge on it. Another thing that's a possibility would be leaf springs, like you find on a lot of cars, trucks, and trailers. And again, you know, they can be reworked and reformed. And actually, I do have some leaf springs out here in my shop. And I have one heck of a stack of lawnmower blades as well, which may eventually get converted to more gardening tools or more blades. Okay, so anyway, with the one that I created for this gentleman, we decided that we were going to go with 4140 steel for it. And, let's see, how to put it. 4140 is it's a medium-high carbon steel, and it has both chrome and molybdenum added to the mix when they're producing steel. And this adds a lot of strength and also flexibility to it. It also has a nice side effect of when the chrome and molybdenum are in there, it kind of, shall we say, fills up the space a little bit. And so it is somewhat lighter than one would expect it to be. Another nice thing about 4140 is that it also responds extremely well to heat treatment. So, okay, so let's go ahead here. We'll go ahead here to the first picture in this sequence. And what you see there is just what I started out with. You know, it's just a chunk of flat stock, it looks like, you know, sitting on top of a wood stump. Now, this base chunk of 4140, this picture was taken before I did any cutting or shaping of it. And the starting size on that was a quarter inch thick by an inch and a half wide. And then it was Boy, I had that had the number messed up. I'll have to correct that on the web page. But it was let's see, 36 inches long. Like I said, goofed up on that when I put that on there. So, you know, it's kind of a nice thing when I'm going through here and talking about this stuff. I can, you know, note my mistakes here on my pages. So, if we go ahead down here to the second picture. This is when I had did some, shall we say, rough cutting on the steel. And it's probably kind of hard to see, but, let's see here. How best to explain it? There's, you can see where there's still, you know, the long flat section of this. And the way, and then on the lower right corner of the picture, it looks almost like it's cylindrical. Well, actually, it's not cylindrical. It's where I had cut away metal. Actually, just, you know, took a saw and cut it. So from the upper left corner, the flat end, down to where the thinner portion starts, that's 21 inches long. And then what's left sticking out is about 10 inches long. The way that was done was I basically was thinking ahead on this. Because since the metal is a quarter inch thick, I went ahead and basically drew my center line for the handle portion. You know, measured over an eighth of an inch both ways from that, marked it, and then did my cut. So what I have here is the long piece, you know, 21 inches wide by inch and a half wide. Or 21 inches long, inch and a half wide. And then the rest of it is a quarter inch square running out. The way I'd done that was after I marked it out, I went ahead first and drilled next to where the tang is going to be at. That's the long skinny portion there. Once I had those holes drilled, then I went ahead and very carefully cut inwards from the outside edge. So what I have is a rounded corner there. You know, it's not cut or not heated or anything at this point. So basically what happens is there's not a sharp corner where the quarter inch square portion is at going into the other one. It's rounded. The reason for that is in the finished product, where metal goes from a very wide section to a very narrow section, if you have a square corner in there, that leads to a weak point. And you could end up with it breaking right off. But if you have a rounded corner in there, it actually adds strength to it. So, okay, so, let's see, just a little bit more about the tang. The tang is pretty much left alone while we are working on the rest of the blade itself. It has two purposes for leaving it as long as it is. One, you know, it's preformed in here, and we, basically, that's taken care of, so we're not introducing any weak points into it, you know, by cutting and grinding later on. It's already done. Secondly, that longer portion that's sticking out, that gives me a little bit more of a handle to work with, you know, so the heat doesn't transfer up, and it works quite well. Plus, later on, when we start getting towards the finishing of it, at that point in time, that's when we can do more procedures on that for... Okay, so, next step here, or the next photo. This was done when I had started the process of heating and hammering the metal. And let's see here, how best to describe it. Okay. With the forming of it, with the heat forming of it, what you do is obviously heat the metal so it's, heated up to a point where it's a good bright yellow heat. And what's done is the hammering is done at an angle. It's what we're trying to do right at this point is the cross section of the blade is basically a long skinny rectangle, you know, square ends on it, and it's flat. It's the same thickness all the way through and to square ends on it. What we want to do at this point is actually reshape this piece of metal to get it to the diamond shape that I had mentioned earlier. So what's done is the hammer blows are struck at an angle coming down onto the metal to start squishing the edges, and it also stretches it out. And what the ideal is to do this so it's a consistent, ridge left on the piece of metal. And this can take quite a few hours to do. This particular photo was probably after I'd been working on it for two or three hours. And you can actually see in the upper right-hand corner of the picture, the blade actually up there is starting to take shape. It's not super visible, but there's actually starting to show the ridge up on along it. And the way that's done is it's basically, when it's heated like you see in the middle, the hammer blow is struck on there, and basically it's working it to this diamond shape. The way it's done is the piece of metal, when it's heated like this, it's not generally left laying flat on the anvil. What you do is you with your off hand, the hand that is not holding the hammer, you tip that up just slightly. On the side that's towards you, you reach over with the hammer and you strike it on the far side, and that starts squishing it out to more of a triangle shape. After you've struck a few blows on the one edge, it gets flipped over, and then the edge that had been facing you is now away, and you go ahead and strike that. There was several strikes there to continue working at getting that diamond shape. It's probably not real clear in explaining this, and I suppose one of these weeks I should probably just take a piece of metal and just demonstrate and do photos individually of how to do the hammer strikes on it. It's probably be the best bet. I just need to find myself a volunteer around here to take pictures as we go. So, anyway, but yeah, that's kind of the process for it. Okay, so, let's see, we are, a little bit past the bottom of the hour, and I'm hardly anywhere on this. But that's okay. If necessary, we can always go ahead into a second week for this. So let's go ahead and go down to the third picture. And this was the one where, again, it's just, you can see the rough shape of the blade here. And at this point, you can probably see it a little bit better. There's almost, if you look down lower right end where the tang is at, you start at that point and just kind of look all the way up towards the other end, which will end up as being our point, you can actually see a ridge. And at this point, our metal actually has been beveled out through the hammering process to where it's about 2 inches wide and also in this process, it's actually thinned the metal enough to where it's down to about 3/16 of an inch thick. And remember, we started out here with the metal being 1/4 of an inch thick, so we've actually lost about 1/16 of an inch of thickness, but we've gained a half an inch in width. Basically, what we're doing is moving the metal outwards and thinner, and as it further out it gets, the thinner it gets. Of course, we haven't done anything with our length. It's still at about 21.5 inches long at this point. And so, like I said, this is probably at the first stage of the blade shaping. And let's see here, if you go down to the next picture there, you can probably see it a little bit better on here, you know, where that ridge is at. Again, it's kind of hard to see because there's a lot of fire scale on the metal surface. You know, this is, fire scale is just basically where the metal has, through heating and cooling, it's, the surface is oxidized, and it'll actually come off in, like, flakes. But, you know, as you're hammering, but, you know, that's where some of our loss of the metal is at. But that has to be expected. Okay. So, if we move down to the picture below that, again, this is another shot of, you know, of the blade. Again, it's probably, or might be a little bit easier, again, to see the shaping on here. At this point, this is where there was a little bit more processing on it, you know, heating and hammering, that where it's approaching its final width of just over 2 inches wide. And let's see how I explain a little bit more here too. When one is heating the metal and hammering it, like the process like I described on here, that actually packs the metal down a little bit. You'd think, oh, well, iron or steel or whatever, it's you know, it's pretty homogeneous, you know, it's the same hardness, and there's the same amount of space between all the molecules. And that's true. Normally speaking, you know, when you have a rolled out bar stock, or like the metal stock I started with, yes, it's pretty homogeneous. It's, you know, the same packedness as throughout the whole thing. But when you're making a sword blade, the hammering, like I was doing here, that actually drives the molecules together a little bit more and packs them together, and it actually starts the process of making it harder. Okay, so again, what I should probably do at this point, since we're pretty well through the, you know, the basic blade forming, you know, the initial shaping of the blade, so I'm going to go ahead and just throw another short piece of music in here, and then we'll go ahead and continue talking about forming the point.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that gave me a small chance at a small breather there. you know, something, yes, to gather my thoughts and look at things here a little bit more. Actually, it looks like I've probably got enough information here on the page and things that I should talk about as I could actually probably... Actually, I'm going to end up making you know, two shows here on the Gladius. So we'll call this show Gladius Part 1, and then the next week we'll do the Gladius Part 2. Okay, so once we get the blade formed, you know, most of the way, you know, to get our long, skinny diamond shape, at that point, you know, pun intended, it's time to lay out the point of the blade. So, and like I said, at this point here, we've gone ahead, we've formed our blade, and we've gotten it out to about 2 inches wide with just over 3/16 of an inch thick. We haven't done anything with the tang. That's still left alone. You know, that'll be in the process of taken care of in the process of forming the final three pieces, the guard, the hilt, and the pommel. Okay, so now we're getting the point. Let me get back to my page here. Okay, so we have our... We're going to go ahead at this point and lay out our point. As you can see here on this first picture, I've actually, you know, done some marking already. What I did was measured, you know, side to side on the point, you know, one to the middle. Since this is was hammered out to about 2 inches wide at this point, there's a center line going from the middle at the 1-inch point all the way down the length of the blade to the tang. That ridge, that line should run right along the top of the ridge if everything's done properly and hammering it out. And in this particular case, it was pretty darn close. I did have to do a little bit of adjusting later on, but that was done in the final finishing. And like I said, we will probably get to that part of it next week. Okay, so once I had my full line running down the full length of the blade, then I went ahead and measured up, or back from the end, 5 inches. Because on the original Roman gladii, on the gladius, the point was a 5-inch long point. Again, at the 5-inch point, I went ahead, drew a line straight across, you know, took a square, and also measured it, and drew my line across. At that point, I could go ahead, again, and draw the last two lines, and this is on both sides. I did this, obviously, so I could just make sure I had everything right, to come this long, narrow triangle, and this is what will end up as being our point, two of the gladius. Okay, so, and if we go down here to the next picture, you can again see, you know, it's more of a distance shot of this, with that long narrow point, and with the line following the ridge up there. Obviously, with the way the lights were in the shop here when I was taking the photo, kind of, shall we say, glared off somewhat. But you can see from the top, very top of the photo there, you know, where the line is at, and you can just basically see it running all the way down where that ridge is at. Okay, so now, at this point, once everything's laid out on the blade, then what one will have to do is remove those two little skinny triangles, the leftovers. And again, any number of methods could be used for this. If one has a grinding wheel, or a cutting wheel on a Makita grinder, you could use that. You could take a saw, a hacksaw, and again, start to cut and you work your way along very carefully so you don't go inside the lines to remove it. Or if this one's real adventurous, they could actually do it the way it had been done, hundreds of years ago, by heating up the metal of the tip. And, obviously you'd need an assistant to do this to hold the blade, but you could actually take and use a hot chisel to cut these off. I have to admit, I myself, since I didn't really have an assistant to hold the thing, and I was trying to be the most expeditious for doing it, I went ahead and just actually cut it off using a Makita. What I did with that is I just went ahead and just put a very fine metal cutting disc on and then cut just outside the lines. Reason for that is if you cut outside the lines, if you, bobble with it, it can always be cleaned up and straightened up afterwards. So it does work fairly easily. Okay, so now we'll go ahead down here to the next shot. And again, this next shot, this is after I'd cut the point. First I had gone ahead and, like I said, used the Makita to cut it off to give me my sharp point on here. And that's the shot you can see, this next one, where I have point cut. Now that's where it's completed. I actually took and used my third hand. It's a little stand with a board on it that I used to support things, where I clamped it and actually cut my straight lines. So if we go down here to the next point, this is another view of it, and again, you can probably see a little bit more of that line for the ridge running straight back. And this is what you want to have, a full straight line to where things are pulled. Of course, when you end up here at this, once you've cut that off, you're going to see kind of an oddball shape there. Because at the widest portion of the triangle, it's going to be as thin as you want it to be when you finish up. But out here at the point, it's going to be that quarter inch thick. And, so it's kind of a mirror image of what you want to end up with. So at this point, if we go ahead here and look at the next shot down, this is actually where I had kind of a pause point in the process, where I could actually take a picture of it to be able to use it for description purposes. Unfortunately, at this point, I didn't get a shot of the next step. It's one that's kind of a odd one to explain, but hopefully I can go through and describe it fairly quickly here. What I did was I took the blade as it was then formed, and like I said, I had kind of an odd point on there. What it was basically, with this laying flat like that, it was basically a high or a thick, almost like a chisel-shaped looking tip on it. What I did was I actually took a chisel at that point, and at the very middle of it, I went ahead and just kind of gave it a light tap to give me a mark in the middle. Once I had that mark there, I went ahead and started filing down from from the on the blade out towards the tip, and filing that down until I had the tip beveled down to basically a point. And if you go ahead and look down at the next shot in this sequence, this is actually a picture of another Gladius point, but you can see where it's brought way down to a sharp point there. So you have a basically where it's been flattened. And so what I had gone ahead and done at this point was to go ahead and start filing. I did a little bit more heating to thin out the edges further back, but then I went ahead and just started filing from the ridge point to the edge and got that brought down to a matching edge all the way. So that lowered the point, or brought the tip to a point, and then also it brought the thickness down from the beginning of the point out to the tip. So it's again kind of probably a little bit hard to visualize, but it's what you're trying to do is actually bring everything to a single point there. You maintain that ridge and you lower that ridge down to match that final point at the tip. So what you end up here with is basically a needle point at the end of the blade. And so that pretty well brings us to the end for this evening for shaping the blade and the point of a Gladius. And let's see, we're at, just over 55 minutes here. So I think what I'm going to do here is I'm going to finish off the evening here with a piece of music called The March of Canbreth. It's a piece you'll recognize that I use a lot of times in my intro. And so with that, let me say this. Thank you very much for joining me here in the Tinker Shop for Saturday evening, the 7th of February of 2015. Take care, God bless, and hopefully I wasn't too scrambled in my descriptions here tonight. So again, thank you very much, and we'll go ahead and exit out with the March of Canbreth, and next week we'll continue on with part two of Building a Gladius.
To hell. up a war, and they won't come near anymore. I use your shield and use your head, fight till everyone is dead. Raise the flag up to the sky, how many of them can we make die? Marching drum, we'll win the war and pay the toll. A fight as one in heart and soul. Midnight mare and blood red roan. Fight to keep this land your own. Sound the horn and call the cry. How many of them can we make die? Axes flash, rocks all swing. Shining armor's piercing ring.